Now here's your host, noted author, speaker, and Catholic apologist, Patrick Madrid.
Don Johnson, Kaylin Green, Timory Millington in for Patrick this morning. Hope your day is going well so far. You can learn more about us at the following sites, donjohnsonministries.org, timory.com, and Kaylin, of course, is the producer of the Patrick Madrid Show. She'll see is on here most days, and you can find her on Twitter, at P Madrid Show. Any other websites they should go to, Kaylin?
No, go to the show Twitter page. That's where everything is.
Everything happens. Mm-hmm. You can find Timory at Timory. If you have not heard Timory and I before, we host a show called Trending with Don and Timory here on this network and others. You can find that at trendingdt.com. Or one of the easiest ways to find it is just to go to iTunes, find Trending with Don and Timory, and hit subscribe. Or iHeartRadio, by the way, is another way to find that. All right, so you ladies are both millennials. Am I right, millennials?
Correct.
Mid-20s. Yeah?
Right.
So let me just throw this out there. You don't have to make it as personal, but maybe just your friends. How are millennial women doing at finding good men?
Oh.
Not well.
No. I see some, yeah, okay. We should have kept the Facebook Live on for this segment. Maybe we'll have to revisit this after. Okay, tell me what's the situation with millennial women as they, are they looking for men? They can't find, tell me, just give me your
yes.
Take
Yeah. Most of my girlfriends are definitely ready to find someone. They want to find that person that, I mean, they're ready for a serious relationship. They want to find a good Catholic man, and it's proven to be very difficult, even though I feel like they do try to put themselves in the right places to meet that kind of person. It still is pretty tough.
Yeah. Now, this is interesting to me because it's not like you, correct me if I'm wrong, Kaylin, but you've grown up Catholic. I mean, you've got the strong family. You've got the parish background. I mean, it's not like you are out there living the wild college life or something.
I grew up in a very solid parish where there were a lot of big Catholic families. And I will say, like, a lot of the people I did grow up with in that parish, they kind of married each other.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not to say that everyone I know has struggled. Like, there have been some beautiful relationships and, you know,
but in general,
guys that have grown up and stayed in the faith. But in general, that's an exception, I feel like.
Yeah. And so you said they're ready to settle down. They're ready to get married. They're, so what age are we looking at here? Mid to late 20s, early 20s?
Mid-20s.
Yep. Okay. Timory, same situation?
Well, I think it's the same situation. Although I think there's a balance. You know, like Kaylin, I've seen a lot of people who got married kind of early on, I'm guessing. Got married, maybe were within their college set or church, wherever they were. And then I still see a lot of my friends who are in their late 20s, early to mid 30s, and they're struggling. They're in their single years and they're waiting for some man to show up. But I think that there's, unfortunately, a huge shortage of available decent Catholic men, and there's almost a surplus of more solid Catholic women. Like, I always make the joke, I have all these women that I would love to introduce to someone, but I really only have very few men of the same age group who are single and someone that worthy to be introduced.
Okay, well, that's an important distinction. I mean, I think the numbers, it's not like all of the men out there are married and there's just, you know, population wise, there's more women. That's not the case. Right. It's that the women that are out there who are open to being married and are looking to settle down and have some children, I assume, cannot find men that they find suitable. That's actually the sort of the lane I want to get into.
Yes.
So what is it about them that's not suitable? Like, what are we looking for? I'm just trying to, like, because I've got some articles here that don't paint a very rosy picture of men, but I want to hear it from you because you guys are there. You know, I'm not the millennial.
And I just want to throw out here, I think for all of us, and maybe throwing this toward Don more so too, but I think that I get a lot of feedback on Trending that we talk a lot about how women can better themselves and how women are struggling and searching, but we don't necessarily talk enough about what can men do, like men who are maybe listening to this and are just having a conversion. Maybe that's something we can go down the road later on. But I think that the question too is, where are these men? Like, where can we meet these people in midst of also your question, what are we looking for?
Here's where they are. They're in their mother's basement playing video games. 888-914-9149. I'll just throw that out there. Listen. Is this a Catholic site, Alatea? Is that
Yeah.
All right. So I'm looking at Alatea, the website, and the headline is "A Millennial Male Reveals What He Thinks of Masculinity." And it starts out, "What is a man?" And here we have this story about a millennial male, self-professed, and he finds it a question worth asking because he's not so sure. He has watched our society, he says, and our art and our media outlets. They have changed what it constitutes to be a man. Now, he doesn't seem to be either the John Wayne type, but he's also not the soft-voiced guy. This is his words. Not the soft-voiced guy in skinny jeans. He actually worked and got the college degree, which is something not a lot of men, frankly, are doing. The numbers are way down. A lot more women getting college degrees. But here's a guy who actually went out and studied. He says he's honest. He's not shady. He tries to do right by others. But in truth, I don't yet feel like a man. I would rather watch a movie about superheroes than see a new political thriller. I'd rather play a video game than go to a club. He does have a girlfriend, it seems, who is constantly snapping him back to reality mid his wine wanders. But he's also scouting the room for the best escape route in case zombies burst through the doors. And listen, I know I've got video game friends. I'm not one of those guys. I've never been the video gamer. And I make fun of them. I do. They're friends of mine, but I make fun of them. I'm like, come on, you're sitting in your, but isn't the stereotype kind of true? Yeah. Like, are you, as a woman, I'm always like, I was a college career pastor for a long time as an evangelical, right? So I worked with a lot of like young 20-ish, right? Mm-hmm. 18 to 24 age. And the women that would, and again, one of my best friends is a total gamer. So I wanted to preface this, but I'd always warn them a little bit about a couple things. And that is the guy just like a serious gamer? Like, that's all he wants to do? That would concern me. And also the porn thing. I mean, the guys who are porn addicts, and there's a lot of them, that's not something you want as a woman. Now, am I wrong? Is this something you find appealing as millennial, unmarried young ladies, which both of you are? Do you want the guy who's the gamer and watches porn?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm super anti-gamer, too, big time, because I see the bad habits that so many young men have had with playing video games. And I think that, you know, this is kind of a weird comparison, but I should probably preface it with talking about video gamers. You need to know the right time and the wrong time to play a game. Just like when we talk about men and really the conversation having to do with weapons and playing with toy guns when you're younger. If you play and have proper rules around toy guns and toy swords, you help to train a child when is a right time and a wrong time to pick up and defend, right? Same with a video game. I think a lot of young men are not learning the right and wrong times to use things at their leisure. Now, pornography would never be acceptable, and certain video games should never be acceptable, but some I think are okay pastimes.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, video games, as long as you're watching your time on it, is sometimes good for a guy to, like, just de-stress. That's, like, his outlet. And I feel like you're right. As long as the game is appropriate, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with that. But don't let it get to the point where it's, you are becoming, you know, sloth and just, that's, like, all you do.
Well, I don't know if you saw this. It was in a fairly well-esteemed, I want to say The Atlantic or Time or one of those just recently, where there was a big defense of video games as a alternative to going down the career path. It's like, hey, what's so wrong? Did you see that?
We talked about that.
Maybe that's what
trending.
It was. Yeah, like, that. Oh, it's okay. You know, there's a lot of value. And you think, okay, but rather than the career thing? And actually, let me give you a little bit more from what this. He's trying to, you know, defend himself. He doesn't frankly paint a very good picture, but he says, you know, after I'd rather watch the movie or play the video game. Cooking is out, he says. If I can't pull something out of the fridge and immediately chow down, I literally stay hungry, he says. If I do go out to eat, I'll inevitably wind up with a hamburger. It's not that I don't appreciate fine food, but I'm impatient. I'm utilitarian. He also says it's not that he's content to be slow and lounge around, but he can't wait to finish something and move on. So very impatient. He says he has no interest in a traditional career. and I'm not interested in going and doing something to spend the rest of my life on. I've watched my parents do that already. I've seen the reward, sacrifices, injustice, and stress that comes from that. Now, this is interesting to me. So he's been told that, listen, as we've all been told, go out, get the money, get the power. You will be happy. You've got to sacrifice, and you'll be fine. He says, my parents aren't fine. I'm not that. That doesn't look that appealing to me, the 9-to-5 that they have with all the stress and the money that I'm sure they've got.
Maybe it's not appealing to them because you're sitting on their couch still and you're way too old for that.
But I do think there's something to this. Like, there is, you talked about millennials wanting authenticity and being able to see BS from a long way away, right? Like, they can see it. We've been lied to our whole life and we can see it. I speak as millennials now. And I'm not interested in doing that anymore. So the alternative for me is video games and movies. Now, should we step in and provide another alternative? Yes, probably. But I think this is worth examining a little bit more. All right. And we're also going to talk, by the way, at the bottom of the hour with a guy who has some really good insight into this, Mark Rignaris. So stick around for that. Dawn, Kalen, and Timory, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back on the Patrick Madrid Show. Difficulty that millennial women are having in finding good men that are marriable. And unfortunately, I think that many are having to wait and wait and wait and ultimately settle, for lack of a better word, for someone who maybe wouldn't have been their first choice and maybe watches a little too much porn and maybe is a bit too much of a gamer. We've got some, listen, devastating stories that are examples. Stick around for the bottom of the hour. We'll talk with Mark Rignaris. Well, it's sad.
Stay tuned for devastating stories.
But true. And anyway. So let's go to the calls, though, because there maybe is some good news out there somewhere. Keith is calling from Salinas. Welcome. You're on with Dawn, Kalen, and Timory this morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
How are you, Keith? What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm good. I just came. I just arrived to work, but I'm like an hour earlier, so that's why I had a chance to give you guys a call. Yeah.
Okay. What would you like to share?
Oh, yeah. I'm from a group called Couples for Christ. So it started back in the Philippines, and now like it's all over the world. But I met my wife through there. So I was that kind of person that you were saying, you know, a little bit of a gamer, a little bit of, you know, I drank and, you know, partied everywhere, right? But after that, you know, I told myself, you know, is this the life that I want to live? So my cousin actually was a missionary worker for Youth for Christ. You know, and back then she kept on inviting me, you know, come to our organization and come to our group, you know, you'll probably like it. So one day, you know, I just told myself, you know, I'm not growing any younger, so I wanna, you know, try to fix my life. So I went to this group, it's called Singles for Christ. And I was amazed there were tons of, you know, I mean mixed guys and girls, you know. But what got me is that, you know, whenever you hang out with them, all they did was, you know, nice things. Like I didn't know that godly people would also be fun, you know, at that time. So I tried it out.
Oh, that's a big myth. We're not fun at all.
I know. Yeah. So I tried it out. And eventually I met a girl there that I liked, you know, and I started hanging out with her, courting her, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, I didn't realize that God was working through me because she was also a missionary, you know, nice. Back then for Youth for Christ. So I was going with her to different missions. And then after a while, I just found out that God was working through me through that, you know. So
Keith,
kind of reformed my life, changed my life.
Nice. Let me ask you something, Keith. Did you have to change yourself a little bit in order to, be attractive, but did you find that in the courtship that you found yourself trying to be more of a better man for your future wife? Did it change you at all, that whole process?
Actually, it did, because before I used to smoke and drink, and then I attended this, one of the conferences back there for Singles for Christ, and I guess that day when I heard the speaker talk about how he was, you know, before his vices and how he changed, you know, that night I just prayed. And I'm telling my wife, you know, I mean, it's like for smokers, they would know that it's so hard to quit smoking. You know, but that time I just prayed, I offered it to God. And then the day after that, you know, on the conference, I couldn't even light a cigarette. Like, I couldn't stand the smell of the smoke. So I was telling
now,
him,
Keith,
I mean, God works, you know.
Yeah. Do you think you would have had as much success in finding a mate if you had been unwilling to change? Or do you think you still would have been able to find somebody?
Probably I could, but I wouldn't probably raise my kids, you know, in a Catholic background, you know, like in a Catholic, you know, going to a Catholic school or going to, you know, or going to church. Because I was those people before that you call Sunday Catholics. Like, I only go to Mass Sunday, and then the rest of the day, you know, I'm not a Catholic.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it, Keith. We're so glad that you found somebody. And, you know, that's a great story. I think, you know, one of the points we're trying to make here this morning, one of the themes I think that you'll see develop as the show goes on, is that ultimately the women are the ones who have the... the gatekeeping role, if you will. Like, women have the power to change men, and I don't want to put this all on women, because again, I'm blaming the men for not being more mature. Ultimately, if there's not enough men out there, it's their fault. But one of the reasons that men don't mature is that there's just enough women, I know this is going to sound harsh, but there's just enough women that are okay with them staying in the situation they're at, and they're still willing to give them sex and everything else. So just keep that theme in mind as we continue. Let's go back to the phones, though. Matt is calling from Ohio. Matt, welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Good morning. Hey, I just thought I'd share sort of an alternate perspective. I definitely hear what you guys are saying. I think it's totally, you know, down the right path. I think that there's... you know, some deeper reasons why you guys probably agree with me, why men, young men today, are so sort of unwilling to be a good guy, quote unquote, like what we would think of as classic good guy, you know, a guy who shows up on time, a guy who takes care of a girl, a guy who looks out for her, treats her with respect, honors her family, goes to church, all that stuff. There's something that happens for a man in exchange for doing all that, and that is to be respected, you know? And I think in our culture, there's a lot of, you know, disrespect of men, and they're put down, and they're made to feel like they're not somebody capable of being, quote-unquote, in charge. And I don't mean ordering everybody around. You know, I mean, like, the Catholic definition of serving and leading. But in order to do that, you need to have a woman who understands how to draw that out of you, you know? And there's not a lot of young women who have seen that example from maybe their mothers or another woman of how to draw that type of leadership out of a man.
And, I think this is a really good point.
Yeah, okay. Ladies, what do you think?
I 100% agree.
Well, and I think that right now there are a lot of poor examples of respect toward men. And I love that you're saying this, because I hear men say this over and over again. We just want to be respected. And I remember at one point asking, what do you mean by that? So I'm going to toss the ball in your direction and say, what do you mean by that when you say you want to be respected? I think this is what women are struggling with.
Yeah, Matt, let's start to you. What do you think?
I'm sorry, I might have interrupted. But
No.
I think what I mean personally by respect is, you know, there's old school ways of courting. You know, you don't hang out with other guys alone. You don't, you know, keep up friendships with your ex-boyfriends, and you don't, you know, and I'm not saying you can't do any of that. I'm just saying there's our culture has planted these ideas in people's heads that it's okay to do any number of things as long as you're not actually breaking the rule. And it's like, no, it's not conducive to a man feeling like he's being respected. You know what I mean? That's just one example.
I think that's a good example.
With other men.
Right, because that helps women to be reminded. I think that sometimes women think, oh, I can still be friends with everyone. But I think from a male perspective, it can kind of seem like, hey, you're not really respecting this relationship and the man that I'm trying to be for you. Instead, you're possibly, and I've seen this with women, still running to your exes when there are issues taking place. And I think that that's a really serious issue, but also entering into the dynamic between men and women. I imagine, Matt, is difficult because I think in general there's this disdain that is bred into women anymore to have toward men. Would you say so?
Yeah, well, it's in the name of equality that we have told women that you don't need a man for things that you would have traditionally got from a man, like money, like support, like physical protection. All of those things we said, well, that denigrates a woman. From a man's perspective, we do not think that denigrates a woman. We just think, well, you guys get to do a lot of stuff, like bear children. That's really, really cool. We get to do some stuff, too. And when you don't allow us to do that, indeed, when you want to step in and do that too, mm-hmm. we don't see a role for masculinity in that equation.
Right.
And so the masculine thing gets lost, and you're right. Well, what am I supposed to do? And so
they want to be respected for what they can bring to the table, what they can do for you, and they want you to appreciate it.
Yeah, and it really is. I mean, biblically even, what does Paul say? Husbands, love your wives. Wives, respect your husbands. He actually doesn't say love. He says respect. It's a huge, huge issue. Matt is exactly right on this one, that the notion that you're valuing the man for something that the man brings to the table, and that the man then loves the wife, gives himself for the wife, that entire equation has been skewed.
Right.
That entire transaction has been skewed in our culture to where now we don't really know what we're supposed to give to the, like, young women, 15-year-old girls, 14-year-old girls, 12-year-old girls are told, well, what is it that you bring to the equation? Well, I'm here to pleasure a man. Like, mm-hmm. that's my role. And I'm only seen as valuable, and he'll only love me if I pleasure him, which is sick and disgusting. You're just being used as an object. But that's the current equation. It's done all sorts of damage. And there are a couple of technologies that have led to this very equation, for where women think that we have to give men sexual pleasure for nothing, basically. And men are getting it and are not required to give anything back in return. It's led to what Mark Regnerus has called cheap sex. And we're going to be talking with Professor Regnerus when we come back. You're with Dawn, Kalen, and Timmery on the Patrick Madrid Show. Stick around for some good conversation about cheap sex. We'll be right back. Dawn, Kalen, and Timmery back with you, hosting for Patrick this morning and for the rest of the week. We've been talking a little bit about the trouble that millennial women are having, and I'm sitting across the table from two of them, the trouble that they're having finding good men to marry. And that's a nice segue into our current topic with our current guest. It is my great pleasure to have Professor Mark Regnerus with us. He's no stranger to challenging subjects and controversy. His research is in the areas of sexual behavior, family, marriage, and religion. He's the author of over 40 published articles and book chapters and 3 books, including his latest, which I highly recommend. This is probably the most important book of the year, maybe most years. It's called Cheap Sex: The Transformation of Men, Marriage, and Monogamy. He also happens to be a part of my new documentary that I'm making on the sexual revolution. Professor Mark Regnerus, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
Mark, in this book, let's set it up. You argue, first of all, that sex is a transaction, and I think this might be confusing to people. What do you mean by that? What transaction takes place?
Right. Well, sex is a lot of different things in some ways, but it involves a transaction between men and women. They are looking for different things in a relationship and even in the sexual act itself. And so men are trading something, their resources, their commitment, their attention, their time, their expressions of love, and in return, they're receiving her, right? And she gives these things as well, but really, I mean, men and women are often looking for something a little bit different in the sexual act and in the relationship itself, men from each other, from women, I should say. So it's an exchange, and we can talk about it in different kinds of ways. We can talk about it in more sort of religious ways, but this is also going on at the same time.
And what would you say in general? And again, we don't want to generalize, and of course you said we could talk about it from different perspectives, but in general, what would women be wanting from that sexual encounter?
Right. Well, it's not to say that women do not enjoy the marital act per se, but they also sort of are looking for expressions of commitment from him. They want to feel desire. I mean, I think women enjoy feeling desired more than men enjoy feeling desired, frankly. And so it's just noticing that men and women are different when they come together in the act.
Yeah, before the break, we were actually talking about that even biblically, that women tend to want love and men tend to want respect a little bit more. And that's
right.
That is part of that transaction. Now, you also argue that two technologies have changed the mating market in severe ways, and this sort of takes up the bulk of your book. What are those technologies, and what have they done to the mating market?
Sure. Well, the first technology was the pill back in the 60s, and then its uptake, which takes decades in some ways for it to really sink in, and it's used to increase. That sort of separates the mating market into corners that it previously hadn't been in, right? So now you can actually have sex and not get pregnant, right? So it opened up this market for short-term relationships that we see today. At the same time, there are people who will always want their sexual behavior to serve either in marriage or seeking marriage, so to speak. So that's what I call that the marriage corner of the mating market. And the key sort of problem here is that men and women find themselves in different corners of this market. There's more men seeking short-term sex than women. There's more women seeking marriage than men. And power in this kind of arrangement flows to the rarer group. So over in the short-term market, there's more men than women. So women call the shots there, but they're less likely to want to be there in the first place. Where over in the marriage corner, they outnumber the men, so the men kind of call the shot. So they can navigate the relationship towards marriage in ways that advantage their interests. And so that's one of the things I see, that the mating market sort of favors what men want. And then along comes high-definition pornography about 10, 15, 20 years ago, and that further cheapens sex, reduces the cost of it, taking more control away from women and giving more control towards men. So when I look at the mating market and the kind of the dating scene out there today, I see power flowing towards men, even though they're offering less, they're less marriageable on average than they used to be. Women seem more intelligent, educated, career-minded than they used to be. So they have plenty to offer. But historically, it was he that had to offer that sort of thing to her in order to be considered marriageable. Now he can access sex, and he doesn't even have to hold down a job. Doesn't have to have a place of his own. Can be in his parents' basement. So that's kind of the state of things. And as you can imagine, it can get pretty grim.
Yeah, there's a devastating story in your book on page 110. And again, I encourage people to get it. We're talking with Mark Regnerus. If you just joined us, professor at the University of Texas, his new book is called Cheap Sex, The Transformation of Men, Marriage, and Monogamy. And you tell the story of Carlos, who just basically straight up admits, and the book is full of verbatim interviews, by the way. He just straight up admits, I'm a porn addict. I don't really have any marketable skills to think of. Yet he still had a woman who was willing to live with him, have sex with him, stay with him. She didn't like it. He wouldn't even let her open his laptop because of all the porn that's on there, and she hated it. But she didn't leave. And it seems to me, Mark, that's a good example of the mating market as you just described it. It's made sex very cheap for men, and made them less likely to be marriageable. Am I summarizing that rightly?
That's a pretty good summary. And you know, I say in that story that there may have been an era in which Carlos would have had trouble retaining the sexual interest of a woman, but that era is no more. So it's aggravating, obviously. And then you throw in online dating, which people can use to their to good advantage and to good ends, but people can also use it towards bad ends, and that can just accelerate their ability to meet people, right, and to efficiently sort through them, kind of commodify them. And it just seems like every time technology advances in this domain, it's dragging us down, it's dragging marriage down, and in particular, it's making women harder to find lasting love.
Yeah, you argue that the pill ultimately makes marriage less necessary. Can you expand on that? Like, you've got a bunch of guys who just don't see why they would get married. Is that right?
Marriage law is sort of against men, but I actually don't think men are opposed to marriage or are checking out or going their own way. What I see is sort of marriage is just simply less necessary. It makes women more selective, which makes sense. They no longer have to get married culturally, economically. At the same time, men's skill set and the resources they offer to women aren't seemingly required in order to be in a relationship with her. So men kind of live down to expectations of them.
I want to return to something that's related you talked about earlier, and I think something that sometimes people misunderstand about your basic argument. You talked about women being the gatekeepers of sex. Can you just expand on that a little bit? And so it's not necessarily that we are blaming women for men's predicament. Men still need to be better, but yet women still do have the power. If there was a few less women, am I right in this, Mark? I know this sounds harsh, but if there were a few less women willing to go on the pill and have cheap sex, would we be better off? Do they have that kind of power?
They do have that kind of power, but it's hard to say a few less. It really is kind of this wide social problem. Women are gatekeepers, which just means that consensual sex with a man will not happen until she allows it to happen. So, and it's easier for her to do that today in an era where sex no longer risks pregnancy, which is, in some ways, I call this grand trade-off. She got control of fertility. He got control of the pace with which sex begins in a relationship, which now the modal or most frequent time when sex starts in a relationship is not like 6 months in. It's not 2 months in. It's before it even is declared a relationship. So, and you can't tell me that's because women want it that way. Women want more commitment. It's just, it's not required.
Yeah, in fact, I was reading a story the other day where sex is now something you do before you start dating. Like, that's like the introductory act. Mark, can you stay with us for one more segment? I hear the music.
Sure.
Awesome. All right. We're talking with Professor Mark Regnerus. He is at the University of Texas, a well-known sociologist who has a brand new book out that I think you should go get right now during this break. It's called Cheap Sex, The Transformation of Men, Marriage, and Monogamy. When we get back, we're going to have some young millennial women ask Mark some questions about why they can't find good men. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show.
Heard on the Patrick Madrid Show are for educational purposes only. Now, here's Patrick.
Don Johnson, Kalen Green, Timory Millington sitting in for Patrick today, and we are on the line with Mark Regnerus. His brand new book is called Cheap Sex, The Transformation of Men, Marriage, and Monogamy. Welcome back, Mark, and Timory, who is a millennial young lady, has a question for you.
Thanks for being with us, Mark. So my question... Yeah, nice to talk to you. So my question kind of centers around, in hearing some of the feedback on your book, I see a lot of expectation placed on women. And I see the importance of understanding, really, I mean, I don't know how else to put it right off the top of the head right now, but the control and decisions based on sexuality is placed on women. But what can men do to really work on that at the same time? So it's not just women, you know, having to say no and expecting more, but how can men work on themselves in the midst of the challenges they're facing in the culture?
Right, right. That's a great question. And it's one of those tensions when you're writing about this subject, you know, especially when I describe that women are very unhappy with this current scenario. And yet it feels like when people read the book, they're thinking that I'm blaming women somehow, right? And I understand why people feel that way. So what can men do? Now, one of the challenges here is that men operate differently regarding sort of personal pressure and social pressure in this domain than women do. So I give the example of one of the things that people can do at universities to sort of counteract the sort of rape culture is to create, you know, single-sex dorms like we all used to know back when I went to college. In some ways, so that what is that doing? It's not saying, hey, men, you have to personally treat her better. It's like, hey, we understand that men react to social pressure pretty well, right? So if you can't get into her dorm room, particular bad things will not happen at, you know, in these young relationships that women don't want to have happen, right? So it's a social barrier, right? So one of the challenges here is that we're asking men to man up, so to speak, and do the right thing, and yet we've created this scenario where we're asking them only to sort of come up with sort of the personal motivation to do the right thing, right? When in front of them, what we've laid culturally is this sort of cornucopia, right? And it's not your fault, and it's not your friend's fault, but it's sort of like, it's a social problem. The cost of sex has come down, and men know it, right? And so, in some ways, I'm not contrasting men today with men in my grandfather's era. I think they're largely quite comparable. What has changed is sort of what is socially expected of them, right? Mm-hmm. And what's possible for them to do. So I hear you when I say, you know, what should we expect of men? Well, we can expect all the better behavior we want, but men are better when they have social pressure placed upon them, rather than just like, I have to find it within myself to do the right thing in spite of the fact that all the wrong things are laid out in front of me. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, that really helps. And go ahead.
This is why it can sound like I'm blaming women for a position they don't want to be in. But, you know, at some level, this is a sociological problem, right? It's a social problem. And when people read it, they read it through sort of their personal lenses, right, of how they have experienced the dating market, its worst aspects or its best aspects. And so people say, well, Mark, what can we do about this? And, you know, then I start struggling to sort of say, oh, well, this is the simple answer, because there is no simple answer, because it's, you know, it's a social problem, right? One that isn't solvable just by what you do or your friends do.
Mark, I thought one of the more helpful aspects of your book to me was your comparison, maybe an analogy, if you will, of the porn industry, or what I would call like sex ink. So you've got sort of the pharmaceutical companies and the porn industry and some of the publishing empire really making a lot of money off of the cheap sex industry. And you compare it sort of to big agribusiness, where we have now a psychosexual obesity, that basically the pill and porn have made sex cheap and easy in the way that we as a society have made food cheap and easy. and that we should fight these in the same way. And I don't know if you make this point directly, you're more just laying out the facts, but might this be a suggestion that we fight it in the same way that we, or understand it and fight it in the same way that we understand the obesity epidemic, that you're in a unhealthy setup right now with the way society is. Am I on the right track there?
Yeah, you're on the right track. And the interesting thing is that most of the complaining that we've heard historically has come from conservatives. But what I talk about in the book is sort of we see people on the left make this argument, and people who would go to the mat to defend the pill, but not realize like the problems that have resulted can be linked back to it. They want a world wherein they have all the advantages of sort of a better dating culture, a better marrying culture, and all the freedoms that the pill seemed to deliver to them, right? I mean, we want all the choices. We want none of the constraints. And it's just like this is an impossible recipe. I mean, it's not going to work. It hasn't worked. It can't work.
You have a really good quote by feminist Naomi Wolf in the book, several right. good passages by her, but the one that starts the paragraph is she says that, hey, a vagina used to have a pretty high exchange value, and she's concerned about this, yet she's, like you said, she still wants to hold on to many of the things that have caused that to decrease in value, right?
Right. Yeah, it's and she wrote that in 2003, and I said, boy, you know, things haven't gotten any better since then. At some level, I think some of her and her friends have kind of just checked out and said, well, this is just hopeless, right? Make the best of the bad situation, et cetera.
Right.
I have to think that eventually there'll be some unity from the cultural left and the cultural right on the gravity of the problem. Now, solutions, I'm pretty sure we're gonna differ on. I mean, we can see this on campus, right? Universities say we need to correct men's speech codes in the sense of they need to ask permission for each step of the way, sort of speaking. Which, by the way, also just highlights the fact that the exchange relationship exists, and we all admit it, right? Because it's men who have to do the asking and women who do the admitting, so to speak. But I just don't see how correcting men's speech patterns is going to really make a dent in this problem.
Right, yeah, the refusal to go back to some of the root causes, the technology. Oh, and we just lost Mark Rigneris. We had the same issue yesterday, Kim.
We did.
I don't know what's going on with our phone system. We're nearing the end of the segment. We'll try to get him back. So, thoughts, you know, ladies, about this transactional nature of sex and how it's cheapening?
Well, I think that it does go both ways. It is a joint effort, kind of like he talked about at the beginning. Like, as women, we can do better in putting our foot down and standing up for our dignity and not settling, not giving in. And maybe that will help men start also changing and stepping up to the plate as well and wanting to be a better man. So I definitely see what he's saying, and I don't take offense to that at all. I think that, as a culture, I think we're so far gone that like all parties need to step it up.
Yeah. And I think, too, practically, because I think a lot of time we hear these in theory, and this sounds great, but when we think about it practically, that's why I kind of toss that question his direction. And from his reaction about what we can do, what men can do, because the power, he's saying, is truly in the women's hands, which gives a lot of responsibility. But then you bounce that back to men, and he talked about how men respond differently to social pressure and personal pressure, how, you know, he gave the example of, for example, college dorms. And you know what? Whether you're a parent getting ready to send your kid off to college, or maybe you're a parent with kids in and out of your home, even older children, you know, in their, you know, college or post-college educational years, maybe having firmer expectations of your adult children who are in your home, and how that pressure alone can influence your son who's not really living a life that you would say is flourishing, or send them to a college with, again, single sex dorms. really simple, basically situation setting them up for success.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, we started the whole show today talking about standing against the culture and not, you know, wanting that personal peace and prosperity and the applause of others. And so often, in fact, I think we talked about it on Trending, Timmy, so often it's Christian parents who are actually succumbing on behalf of their children to the cultural expectations, where if we as parents could just stand a little stronger against the culture on behalf of our children, rather than wanting our children to be loved and accepted by everybody else, if we do the loving and accepting. A little bit more on this. We've got some parenting articles. Thanks so much to Mark for calling in. Looks like we dropped him. That's all right. Mark's got to get to work today. His book's called Cheap Sex, The Transformation of Men, Marriage, and Monogamy. Seriously, one of the most important books I think you will find on the market today. Go get it. It's on Amazon. It is by Oxford Press. Mark always has good stuff. Also, you can find him in my trailer for Unprotected. He is there, a great interview. So go to that, unprotectedfilm.com. We'll be right back after this.